It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. You've had it circled on your calendar for months. You've trained through some of the worst weather a Pittsburgh winter can possibly throw at you. You've changed your diet. You've put in countless miles. And if you're really doing this right, a few 20-plus mile practice runs. And now you're ready to run the Pittsburgh Marathon. Or are you? What if it ends up being a really warm day? What if it rains? What if you start to cramp up? Chances are, after all this preparation, you'll want to fight through it. But how? I'm joined now in Studio A by Dr. Ron Roth, the Pittsburgh Marathon's medical director and an emergency medicine physician at UPMC. Ron Roth, good to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
Also with us is Dr. Kelly Anderson, orthopedic doctor who oversees elite runners for UPMC. Dr. Kelly Anderson, thank you for joining us.
I'm excited to be here and excited for the upcoming race.
I'm sure a lot of people are, and I'm guessing a few folks have questions. If you do, we have the experts with us. Call us. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essphgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essphgh. How fundamental is knowledge of how to handle weather and temperature to a runner's performance?
Well, we know from the medical standpoint that the higher the temperature, the more people will see get injured. So we closely watch the weather, and we will have flags up for the runners with respect to the weather. So
flags.
Right, so colored flags. So we have a system that has a green flag, yellow flag, and red flag, and we will monitor the weather, both the heat, the humidity, and the sun, and we will give the runners some gauge on what we believe the weather conditions will be along the race.
So green would be, you know, just keep going, you're in good shape. Yellow is a caution, and red is you might want to think about stopping?
Not stopping, but changing. So if your plan was to go for your personal record and we're in the green, that's a good idea. If we start heading to the yellow or red, this is a day where maybe you're going to slow down, you're going to take more fluids in, and you're not going to try and make a personal record.
Sounds kind of like the Indy 500. Now all you need is a checkered flag at the finish line, and that'll be a lot of fun for folks. So, you know, so often we see these dramatic scenes at the finish line of a marathon. Somebody, you know, not an elite runner, but somebody who is in the broader field, and they are struggling to get to that finish line, and they're limping or they're crawling, and people are urging them on. Is that a good idea? Should people push through that kind of distress?
Well, I think it's hard to say no if you've just spent the last year trying to run a marathon.
Sure.
And you're 20 feet from the finish line. I think just about everyone is going to push through it. What we do ask is that people that are upright not try and sprint that last mile, because we know your energy stores are down and you're at highest risk of having a medical problem in that last mile if you really try and kick it in and try and
really
get in quickly.
Because pretty much everybody does that.
Right. And sometimes we encourage people. But we want you just to keep your pace, come across the finish line, and we'll celebrate as you come across.
One of the biggest things we tell runners is to avoid changing anything on race day. So if you didn't sprint the finish line of your practice runs, don't sprint to the finish line of the marathon. Keep your pace. And it's important to walk afterwards for a good 20 minutes. You do not want to stop right at the end of the race. That's when the blood pools in your legs and you get lightheaded. So we really encourage them to continue to run just as they did in practice, just at the same at the finish line, but then keep walking afterwards to do a proper recovery post-race.
Now, Kelly, your specialty is orthopedics, and a lot, you know, runners take a lot of pounding during the course of 26.2 miles, and the elite runners are in shape for this. Their bodies are lighter, they're streamlined, but there are a lot of people out there in that field who may not be in the best of shape. They might be in good shape, but they're not in elite athlete shape with low body fat, and their body's taking a pounding. What signs should a runner look for? When would a runner know that they're in trouble?
So they have to listen to their body. I do primary care sports medicine, and we see a lot of overuse, injuries, strains, sprains, et cetera. And so the biggest thing is listening to your body throughout the race. If you start to feel pain, listen. Try to back down a little bit. Then if you recover nicely, continue to run again. But it's that pain that just doesn't seem to be going away that you have to actually listen. You know, if it's to a point where you can't go on, you maybe need to stop, be evaluated quickly, see if things are okay. We've got med tents, you know, spread out throughout the course. But it's to the point where we're going to want you to push through if you can. But based on your training, if you didn't have that kind of pain in training, then it's a warning sign if you start to have that during the race.
And that could be an indication of maybe a strain, a tear.
It could be, exactly. Cramping is another thing to look for. A lot of runners will experience that if the temperature is different on race day. So any change in your norm from your training days is something to be more alert of and check in with your body to see if that's something that is more significant at this time.
That's Dr. Kelly Anderson, orthopedic doctor who oversees elite runners for UPMC. Also with us, Dr. Ron Roth, the Pittsburgh Marathon's medical director and an emergency medical physician at UPMC. If you have a comment or a question, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. And it wouldn't be advisable just for runners necessarily to call, although we certainly encourage runners who have questions to join this conversation. But you may be someone who is supporting a runner. You may have a family member or friend. The way that with the number of events that have been added to the Pittsburgh Marathon, it seems like pretty much everybody in the city is involved in one way or another. So you may have some questions that pertain to participation, and you can dial in at 412-246-2002 with those questions for our experts in studio, and also email ESSPGH at WESA.FM on Twitter at ESSPGH. Dr. Anderson, you mentioned hydration. It's probably going to be a little warmer weather than we've experienced here of late. And the question then becomes, you know, what do you do? How do you stay well hydrated? You don't want to have fluid sloshing around in your stomach, but you also don't, the worst thing would be if you did dehydrate. So how do you address that issue?
Well, we're hoping that a lot of racers have been focusing on their hydration status before race day. However, some of the tips that we give are the night before, you want to focus and get in about 16 ounces of water the night before. The day of, you want about 16 ounces of water again that morning. But about 10 minutes before the race, we like about 10 ounces of a sports drink prior to that race. And then we've got aid stations and water stations throughout. But don't stop at every water station to get a drink. If you are thirsty, that's a guide. If you feel thirsty, that's when you stop to get water. But again, they should have calculated, you know, their water intake prior and kept up with the similar training schedule as they did previously.
Here's what some of us have heard. Dr. Ross, maybe you can address this. You hear sometimes that don't wait till you're thirsty. Don't chug a lot of fluid, but drink starting at the first aid station, because you don't want to wait until you are thirsty, because then you might be in trouble.
So in the old days, that was the instructions that we gave to runners. We actually said stop at every water station, drink a whole cup of fluids, and continue at every aid station. That was the exact wrong information to give.
And throw out everything that you thought you knew, because
yes,
it's all changed.
And it actually probably contributed to a condition called hyponatremia or low sodium. And it's actually probably due to too much fluid.
The water flushes out the sodium and the other things you might need, the potassium, that sort of thing?
It's more of a dilution. So So you have too much water on board and you're not processing it. So again, it seems like a radical change for those of us who have been providing medical advice for 20-some years.
Yeah, I've heard that for many years. I'm sure others have too.
But it's really drink to thirst. Kelly gave some good guidelines. And in the past, we used to tell you to the ounce of how much to drink, and that was probably wrong. It's really drink to thirst.
Yeah, I was trying to set off a debate here, but clearly you guys are in total agreement on this. And Dr. Anderson, you are someone who adheres to the needs of the elite runners, and the elite runners always have their own bottle of fluid. You know, they make sure to carefully label them. What are these people, these super runners, drinking? What is in that stuff?
That's the question of the century. They each probably have their own regimen, but I mean, water is a big thing, and the Gatorade is also huge. But they carry their own water bottles for a reason, especially because they're strictly, you know, tested afterwards, and so our winners have to be very particular about what goes inside of them in terms of fluid intake. But they each have strict regimens that they've found is the best for their peak performance.
Is there any? There's got to be somebody that has something really weird in there, like gravy or something. I mean,
it'd be interesting to take a poll.
And you know, for people that are really trying to do a personal best, you know, is there some sort of because there's not just fluid, there's also things that people can eat or swallow along the way. I think there's something called goo. What else is there that a runner might be interested in?
There's different gels that runners can take. We have one on the course, about three different of the hydration spots. There's Carb Boom gel, and there's protein bars scattered throughout as well. Some runners may choose to do gummies or jelly beans that have been made sport-specific for runners. So again, they each kind of try their own technique and see what works best for them. But on our course, we've got gel, we've got protein bars, and then at the end, pretzels for a little bit of salt intake as well.
Sounds good to me. Now, turning our attention to attire, and not so much from the sense of being a fashionista, but more for practicality, what is the biggest mistake a runner can make when it comes to clothing and or race day attire?
I think a common theme that you'll hear from us is don't do anything new on race day. So the worst thing you can do is go to the expo and get a great running outfit and new running shoes and wear those on race day.
Those vendors won't be happy to hear that.
You'll wear them for next year's marathon.
Sure. Yeah. Wait till you break it in.
Right.
And I'm sorry, you were going to say
something. Yeah, I was going to say, on race day, layers are important. You know, if you're cold in that morning, which you expect because the weather's a little chillier, it's okay to, you know, wear a long-sleeve shirt to the race, but be prepared to take that off once the race starts to avoid getting overheated. But layers are important because you're able to then change depending on the temperature.
And you can also, that sort of, does that help you prepare for the unpredictability? Because Pittsburgh, I mean, it's not exactly, I don't know if it was Boston or San Francisco that Mark Twain said, if you don't like the weather, wait a minute. But the weather does change here somewhat drastically at times in Pittsburgh. So is that part of how you would prepare for those events?
Right. So at the start line, it's going to be cool. It's going to be 50 degrees. So wear something that you're willing to get rid of, toss away. that clothing will be donated to Goodwill, so it's going to a good cause. The other option that we encourage is get a trash bag. So a black trash bag. Remember to cut a hole out for your head. That's pretty straightforward. And then if you want, decorate it. And just before the race starts, you can toss that trash bag off.
The good thing about the trash bag is that, one, it keeps you warm in the morning. And then if it rains, you've got a little protection.
I guess, although, you know, you don't want to have, you know, they have those photographers that will snap your picture and then, you know, they'll send you a copy, and do you want to buy this? And you don't want to end up seeing yourself in a trash bag necessarily, do you?
Then you better bedazzle it.
Yeah, that's why you decorate it.
There you go. How bad is rain for a runner's health and focus?
So rain is a tricky situation, one, because it cools them down a little bit, and so they've got to watch their temperature gauge. If it's something that they're not used to, sometimes we get a lot of issues with blistering and chafing, which is important to watch for. So rain does throw a little bit of a complication into it, but again, being prepared, having that trash bag ready in the morning so you stay dry until the race starts, and then throughout the race, stay in check with your body. Look for those blisters. Look for that chafing so you can catch that before it happens or right as it's about to happen so it doesn't get worse.
And they do have, the people that have the Vaseline on the side. You can get some of that if you need it.
Absolutely. Don't be afraid to use it.
Yeah. No, it's I've heard more than one runner say that it does come in handy. We're talking about how to prepare as a runner for the marathon, and really not just necessarily for the marathon, but the half marathon, the relay, whatever event you or someone you know and love might be participating in, getting some good practical advice right now from Dr. Kelly Anderson, orthopedic doctor who oversees elite runners for UPMC, but obviously has advice good advice for all runners. And Dr. Ron Roth, the Pittsburgh Marathon's medical director and an emergency medicine physician at UPMC. How nerve-wracking is it to be charged with the health of thousands of people who are running the city streets, potentially in 80-degree heat?
Well, this is not my first marathon. So,
Roth says this is not my first rodeo.
And we've been doing this since 1985. And we've had snowstorms during the marathon, and we've had 90-degree temperatures. Obviously, if I had to pick a temperature, it would be very cool. The humidity would be low, and it'd be cloudy, and maybe just a tiny bit of wind. But that perfect marathon weather doesn't always come. So we watch the weather, and we look at the weather daily and sort of email around weather reports, and we'll adjust our medical care based on the weather.
I think what the runner can do to help us out from a medical standpoint is fill out the medical information sheet on the back of their bibs. So if they're stopped at an aid station, you know, we're able to really treat them appropriately because we'll know a little bit more about their medical history.
And so you said, Dr. Roth, 1985, so you were there for the very, very first one.
Right. I wasn't in charge back then. I was just a worker bee. But
you're someone who would have seen now in the last 30 years how things have changed. And you mentioned the whole advice about the water thing, which clearly has drastically changed. But how has the handling of injuries and other situations along the way and at the finish line changed?
Well, I think we've gone from sort of just a culture and some thoughts on how to treat marathon runners to now there is some science. People are doing research on long-distance running, and we've participated in some of those research projects. And now there's some science behind how we treat long-distance runners.
And how should distance runners recover post-race? What nutrition and fluid regime should they follow in the days after the race?
So it's really important to stay hydrated post-race. We encourage slow intake of fluids throughout that post-race day. We want them to avoid any Tylenol or ibuprofen up till about 6 hours afterwards. So again, making sure you hydrate, and then if you need that medication, that's important. And then we want them to get some protein in their diet post-race to start for muscle recovery.
What about meat? Because
exactly.
you hear runners say, I've been carbo loading for so many days that all I want now is a burger or a steak.
So I say go for it. You do need to load up on protein afterward to enhance muscle recovery. It's very important. Yeah, we do stress the carbs before, but we then stress protein and carbs afterwards.
The other thing I've heard, and Kelly, you were saying don't stop. Make sure you walk for a while after the race so you know the blood is flowing properly and you're not getting stiff or having problems. I've heard of people that will go from the race course to the golf course, walking 9 or 18 holes. Does that help get, staying upright for that long? Is that advisable?
Walking is good post-race, but too much activity afterwards delays the recovery. You need to listen to your body. Even napping is a good thing at times, but too much exercise post-race isn't helpful for the recovery period.
So by the fifth hole, if you need a golf cart, by all means, go for it. Dr. Roth, how do you and your team prepare for emergency medical situations? That is the thing that everybody holds their breath about, going into marathon day because, you don't want to hear about some tragedy. And unfortunately, periodically they happen. You hear about a runner that unfortunately for whatever reason, literally drops dead. So, what are the things that you have to prepare for to try to make sure everybody gets through this thing in one piece?
The good news is that I have 400 colleagues working with me along the race course and at the finish line. We also partner with Pittsburgh EMS and some of the surrounding EMS agencies to help provide medical care on the course. We have 18 aid stations, including a very large finish line medical tent. So we have the equipment, we have the personnel, and we're ready to take care of any emergency.
It sounds like we are ready for a great race day, and we certainly, if we didn't know some of these things before, we certainly know now. We've gotten some great advice from Dr. Ron Roth. Again, he is the Pittsburgh Marathon's medical director and an emergency medicine physician at UPMC, and Dr. Kelly Anderson, orthopedic doctor who oversees elite runners for UPMC. Thank you both for being with us here in studio, offering such great advice, and hopefully it'll be a great Pittsburgh Marathon Day for you and the runners on Sunday.
We're excited for it.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up, how the Kids of Steel program is promoting healthy habits on Essential Pittsburgh on WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's Marathon Weekend in the Steel City. The big race is Sunday morning. In addition to thousands of adults running and walking, many children will be running their final mile as part of the 2015 Kids of Steel program. The program aims to promote healthy personal habits from exercise to good nutrition. Here to tell us more about this program for younger runners are Patrice Matamoros, CEO of the Pittsburgh Three Rivers Marathon, and Michelle Nichols, Program Director for Kids of Steel. Patrice, Michelle, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Michelle, aside from what we described in the introduction, would you tell us more about the goals of the Kids of Steel program?
Sure. So with the children who are participating, we give them 4 months to get their training in. We want them to complete a marathon, and we've realized they can't do that in one day. So over the 4 months, they're going to be logging 25.2 miles of exercise, and they'll be eating different fruits, vegetables, beans, and nuts along the way. And then the program culminates at the Toyota of Pittsburgh Kids Marathon, which is part of the Dick's Sporting Goods Pittsburgh Marathon weekend of events.
And was there a need for a children's fitness program? What led to the creation of the Kids of Steel program?
Well, when the marathon came back in 2009, they knew the importance of the kids being active. This is about the time when the American Medical Association was starting to say that kids of this generation were going to have a shorter lifespan than their parents. So the marathon was very proactive in creating this program for kids. We certainly didn't want to leave them out and watch their parents and their guardians getting healthier and watching the kids' health not making improvements. So that's when they brought it back, and we are in our fifth year now, and it's a very successful program.
And Patrice, how many schools and children participate in the program?
Well, today, this marathon is amazing. We have over 6,000 kids who will be registered to run in the program, or who will be registered to run on Saturday, in addition to parents, which probably will be between 4,000 and 5,000. So, you know, the event is going to be huge on Saturday. But the other thing that I think is really, really huge is the amount of schools that are participating. This year, we have over 120 schools involved. We have 13 different counties involved. And we actually crossed state lines, too, and went over to West Virginia.
And as far as the exercise aspect is concerned, how do you measure kids' activity or energy expenditure? They're not running 26.2 miles, which, of course, is the marathon distance. They're not doing it consecutively, but they are doing it, what, over the course of four months?
We suggest that they start their training in January. And so every 15 to 20 minutes of heavy breathing exercise counts as a mile. We do realize that not every child is a runner. So while running or walking a mile is the easiest way to get their miles, we give them those equivalents. So if they're sledding in the winter, if they're walking their dog, even if they're just playing in the backyard, that 15 to 20 minutes of heavy breathing counts as a mile. So they're really, they can see that the activity is not just about running, that it's really just about moving and consistently keeping their heart rate up. And that's the best form of exercise for them.
And in the 5 years that you've been doing this, have you tracked results? Have you maybe monitored kids, particularly someone who might have been obese or was not in the best of health because of inactivity, who got involved in this and improved their lifestyle and eating habits?
We don't have any specific story about that. We kind of hear those anecdotal stories from teachers. We do have a family in the North Hills that they were inspired by their kids doing this through their school. So then the parents started running. Then they started doing the 5Ks. They started losing weight. And then they were named, I think it was a healthy family from the American Heart Association. They won an award. So the program is like a good first step for adults who maybe need that little push, maybe need their kid to encourage them to get out there and exercise, because really we do it for the kids.
And Kids of Steel places a lot of emphasis not just on exercise and fitness, but also nutrition. Mm-hmm. How does the program foster healthy eating habits among kids who participate? Patrice.
Well, it's all in making it fun. So what we've done is we've hired a dietetic technician, who is Michelle, as well as Nick Fisher, who is a registered dietitian. And what Nick does is he goes in and he does the school assemblies, and he makes it really fun to eat healthy foods. He has a phenomenal sense of fun, spirited, and he creates games in which they have fruits and vegetables, and so that they're not even realizing that they're eating, ooh, yuck, a vegetable. But he really does encourage the kids to try new foods, makes it fun for them. And then we also have a coach that we brought on this year, and so the kids can call out a fruit or vegetable, and then he beatboxes about it. So it really adds to the environment. It makes the kids do things they normally would not do because they see their friends doing it. They see Nick doing it, and Nick is cool to them. And then they try those fruits and vegetables.
And you mentioned the 20-minute time frame mm-hmm. that you're using for the measurement. How did you arrive at that figure, Michelle?
Industry standards, sort of. We know that 15 to 20 minutes is about how long it would take for them to walk a mile or to run a mile, which is why we kind of put that in as our equivalence. So we just, the American Heart Association and all sorts of different organizations suggest that these kids get 60 minutes of exercise a day, and at least 30 of them should be aerobic. So by putting it into like a 15 or 20 minute chunk, it's a manageable amount. To say that I could do something for 30 minutes sustained is kind of hard. So if we give them those manageable chunks, they may be more likely to do that.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking with Patrice Matamoros, CEO of the Pittsburgh Three Rivers Marathon, and Michelle Nichols, Program Director for Kids of Steel, about the 2015 Kids of Steel program. One component of the program is an emphasis on reaching out specifically to underserved neighborhoods. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think it's a program that hits your heart when you see maybe a child doesn't have the resources that other children do, and maybe they're not running because they don't have the running shoes, or they don't have the guidance, or they just don't know running as a sport. So what we did is we reached out to three different communities and said, we would like to jump in here. We'd like to do something that helps the kids, that helps the neighborhood, that is positive. Would we be able to bring a Kids of Steel program into your program? And would we be able to do it free of charge and also provide clothing or shoes to those kids who need it, as well as nutrition and sometimes even food or a cooking lesson? So that's really what we did in getting that started, and it's been really phenomenal.
And Michelle, what are your goals for the Kids of Steel program moving forward?
We would definitely like to see our reach into these underserved neighborhoods increase through Project Run. We would like to get into more parts of the city because a lot of our runners are coming from the suburbs, and we're here. We're in this city. It's accessible. And so we really want to move forward with that project. We'd also like to continue, like Patrice said, continue in expanding into a multi-state. We have schools in West Virginia that are interested, and in Ohio, we'd love to be able to see that happen as well. But we'll just keep taking more kids every year.
It's the Kids of Steel program associated with the Pittsburgh Marathon, and it's encouraging kids to be active and get involved in running. And it's part of the events this weekend, the Pittsburgh Marathon weekend. The marathon is Sunday. I know that both of you are very busy, and I want to thank you for making time to come over and talk with us. Patrice, while we have you here, what's new and exciting about this year's marathon?
Well, there are so many different things that we do that are new and exciting. One we just talked about was the Project Run. Another thing that we're doing this year, which is very unique, I think, is we typically have 15 hand cycles that participate in the marathon, and they're disabled athletes who this is how they're competing now. So this year we opened it to 10 Paralyzed Veterans of America. So we'll have a total of 25 participants and athletes, and we're really, really excited about this because it's just our opportunity to serve those who have served us. So we're looking forward to that. The other thing that we added was we added a toddler trot. So our youngest participant this year is 2 years old. Our oldest participant is 85 years old. So that's quite a range.
And 83 years is pretty, that's a pretty big range.
It is. And then on top of that, we have the Purina Pro Plan Pet Walk. So truly, the whole family is participating. We're seeing, you know, multi-generational stories now, which you just heard about, like from 2 years old to 85. That's a wide span. On top of that, add a dog to it. The other thing that we have is a media challenge. And I know you guys are participating in that media challenge. You're leg number 3. And we're anxious to see how you're going to do. You're not the only person that's going to be in the media challenge, though. WTAE is competing with you, as well as WPXI, as well as KDKA. So
they're all lining up to be runner-up to WESA. Is that what you're saying?
They are. They're getting their shoes on and lacing them up. And they said that they were, KDKA just said that they were going to be number one. So we'll see.
Everybody set your alarm. It's the Pittsburgh Marathon. It's happening Sunday, and we've been talking about some of the events that are surrounding that, including the 2015 Kids of Steel program. Thanks to Patrice Matamoros, CEO of the Pittsburgh Three Rivers Marathon, and Michelle Nichols, who is Program Director for Kids of Steel. Really appreciate you both being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Taking part in this weekend's Kids of Steel run is 6-year-old Alex, a student at the Environmental Charter School. Essential Pittsburgh caught up with Alex and his dad, Scott, during a break in their training at Schenley Park.
So, like, I get my legs pumped up from exercise and improves my strength with my legs.
With the school thing, I think it's great just to get everybody out there together and running.
Yeah. So we're partnered up and we get to pick who we're partnered with. So I'm partnered with 2 other people. So there's 3 groups.
I'm really excited. He's really gotten into running at such an early age. It's great to really try to build this stuff for the future and just think of it as something normal to do instead of something extraordinary. The great thing is with him and with kids in general, if you don't treat it as a chore and something that's fun to do together as a family, it seems like something natural. Where now we're at the point where he asks me, hey, Dad, can we go out for a jog for 2 miles? And we just think it's something fun to do together rather than it's something that, you know, is a task that, you know, we're trying to lose weight or it's just part of our lifestyle now.
So we have this chat where we're slowing down. So we say train hard, never give up, because then that makes us more confident that we're going to run faster when it's almost the end of the race and we're really close. We run very fast.
I've never run before, and Alex and I just started running together, and it's been great. It's a really good bonding experience with us.
Yeah, pretty much.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Not long ago, Emily Gordon was a junior biochemistry major at UCLA aiming to become a lab researcher. She's still looking forward to a career in biochemistry, but she may have to put it off until after the 2016 Olympics. Emily achieved a time of 2 hours and 39 minutes in just her second marathon in Huntington Beach back in February. It qualified her for the Olympic trials. Just how far this relatively inexperienced marathoner can go remains to be seen, but right now it appears the sky is the limit. She is in town for Sunday's Pittsburgh Marathon and joins us now in Studio A. Emily Gordon, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much.
I'm guessing that you have plenty of marathon opportunities to choose from. So what led you to decide to come to Pittsburgh for this weekend's race?
Well, yeah, there are many marathons every weekend, it seems. There's something exciting going on. I run for Team USA Minnesota. I just signed on to the team a couple months ago, maybe about 6 months ago. And we're supported through the American Olympic Development Program by the Pittsburgh Marathon Association, the P3R group. And they offered to have me out here, and it worked well with my timing leading up to the Olympic trials with my recent move to Minneapolis. And I've been here for the 10-mile, for the EQT 10-mile. So I knew I liked it here, and it worked out just well, and I was excited.
Yeah, that was back in November, right?
Right.
And so, and I think it was pretty cold the day they had that. But you being in Minnesota, that wouldn't bother you.
Well, you would think. But I wasn't in Minnesota at the time. I was still in L.A. I was still in school through December. So Los Angeles had a really warm fall. I think it was in the high 80s when I was there. And then I flew to Pittsburgh, and it was about, I think it was 36 the morning of the race. So for me, that was that was huge.
Yeah, but here you are, a native Californian who now lives and trains in Minnesota. I'm guessing some of our listeners might be trying to wrap their heads around that one. I mean, there was an opportunity there, but the idea of a California woman training in that kind of cold weather, and it's very cold, even in the Twin Cities. What about that, and how does that impact your training? How have you adjusted to that?
Well, yeah. So I can't tell you how many times I've been had that reaction saying, okay, wait, you're from San Francisco area. You went to school in Los Angeles, and you're going to be in Minneapolis where there's snow and cold and weather. And
you do understand why people would ask that question.
Yeah. I mean, of course I do. And I question myself every day. I was like, what am I doing? When I was moving there, it was -6 on my first day. And that's big for
Let's
me.
Let's go for a training run.
Right. So,
in a
so I did.
What did you wear when it was -6 and you were running?
Oh, so I had a pair of tights and a pair of windproof tights over that. And then I had a tank top, a t-shirt, a long sleeve shirt, a long sleeve zip up, and then a waterproof layer with a face mask and a hat. I think that's it.
Did it keep you warm?
Yeah. My eyelashes turned white with snow, though. It was really cool. So anyways, yeah. But like most of the places I checked out to do my elite training at were going to be places that had weather. You need to be able to bear the elements if you want to be able to race in them. And California is not the best place for that. Unless you're on the track, it's a little bit different. Usually they stick with more ideal weather. But I want to run the roads, and I want to run marathons where things change and weather affects you. And that's where the training programs are. If you look at some of the best programs, they're in Michigan where it's snowy, and they're in Flagstaff where it's cold and at altitude. You have to be able to work with it. And Minneapolis just ended up being the place for me. So.
Good for you. Glad it's working out. You were a track and cross country runner in high school, and you had even been a gymnast for 9 years. But you didn't run your first marathon until 2013 in San Francisco. And I understand that you did this as kind of a lark.
Yeah. So I was a gymnast, and then the woman who drove me to gymnastics practice was actually the coach of the high school for the track and cross country team. And she said, you're going to be a runner. And so I told her, no, I'm not going to be a runner. And I ran my first season of cross country, and I told her that I was going to quit gymnastics. So I was a runner then, and I was a sprinter. I started hurdling for points for the team through our league conference. And I loved hurdling and sprinting. So I did anything from the 100 up to the 400 meter hurdles.
What did that coach see? What led that coach to say, she may be a gymnast now, but running is her future?
My favorite events were the floor with the tumbling. I had really powerful legs. I liked vault. That was another one where we had to use a lot of power and sprinting. And I think she just saw my drive for the sport. And I wasn't a gymnast. I'm 5'8", and I was the tallest girl when I was 10. I was taller than all of the other gymnasts on the team. So she knew I wasn't going to be a gymnast forever. So her daughter and I were good friends, and I think she knew that I was ready for it. So.
We're talking with Emily Gordon, who is one of the elite runners taking part in the women's race in the Pittsburgh Marathon. She won the Nike Women's Marathon in San Francisco in her first marathon in 2013. What was your goal for that marathon?
That goal, oh gosh. Somebody asked me that the night before the race, and I said, you know, I'd really like to qualify for Boston. I don't really know. That was a 3:35 I needed to run. And my friends were all there with me. We all just signed up on a whim because we got a discount because we were college students. I was like, well, it's $150 for the long or for the half and for the full. I'll just do the full. And so my goal was to just go out there and smile at every single mile and enjoy myself because I love San Francisco and I love to run. And I just, you know, just went out there to enjoy it. And by mile 13, I pull up next to one of my teammates and she's like, oh, just so you know, that's the lead car right there. You're going to be in the front if you pass me right now. I was like, no way. That was awesome to me. And so I was chatting it up with the people on the bike that were the lead bikers and I was talking to the people in the lead car. So I was enjoying myself the whole time, not caring about my time. And it was just a thrill, like the adrenaline for just being up there and the excitement. So just to enjoy myself. And I got lucky.
The reporters must have been losing their minds. I'm guessing you weren't invited to like the press conference before the race or any of that stuff. They had to be wondering, who is this lady?
Yeah. Yeah. I got to walk into the green room before awards and I met Joan Benoit, the awesome marathoner.
She won the first women's Olympic marathon in 84.
Yep. And Kara Gaucher was there when she was still sponsored by Nike. And I met both of them and Joan was like, wait, you've never run a marathon before? I said, no. She's like, you should really consider doing this, like training for one, because you could do well.
You might just want to think about making a career out of this.
It was great. So,
And so you won your first marathon, and how did that change your life?
Well, I was a triathlete at the time, so I had run for the track team in high school and then into college. I was a hurdler. I spent a year and a half running and then decided to quit the team. I didn't love it. I wanted to love training again, and so I got into a triathlon team where all my friends were as insane as I was about going on like four-hour bike rides and running all the time and swimming as much as we could and not really paying attention to school. I did well.
It's a common tale.
Yes. And then I run this marathon and it was like, wait, most people go from being runners to being triathletes because it's easier on your body and you can do three sports and still be okay at everything. But then I got to do the reverse thing. So I got called by a coach and he said, I want you to go to the Olympic trials. I think you can do it. Let's see what we can do with your training. And so then it's been a running story ever since.
And had the Olympics or the idea of running in the Olympic marathon, was that even a remote dream, you know, prior to what happened at this marathon in San Francisco?
No, I didn't even know what the Olympic trials were. I didn't know what the qualifying times were. I didn't know what the story was. So, no, not even a blip in my mind.
So you have now qualified for the Olympic trials, which are being held in Los Angeles next February.
Right.
So what has to happen between now and then?
Stay healthy, train hard. Ideally, I would get the A standard. That means the difference between A and B is support from the Olympic Committee. If you have the A standard, a 237 flat.
You ran 239, so you just missed it.
I have the B standard, yes. So I'm going, but I have to pay my way in terms of flight and rooming and board and stuff like that. So if I get the A standard, 237 flat or faster, they will pay for those things for me.
So how do you support yourself?
I have some sponsors. I run, my shoe sponsor is Saucony, and I also have some nutrition from Bonk Breaker and Genucan, and the RRCA, which is the Roadrunners Club of America, they're from DC. They offered me a grant, the Road Scholars Grant, and that gives me some money in order to travel. And then the Team USA Minnesota, of course, helps me with travel and stuff like that.
And how many miles are you putting in?
I'm a low mileage runner. Most marathoners will tell you they're running somewhere between 120 to 150 miles a week in their big cycle. I topped out at 90 miles this week or this season. So I average around 80 miles a week, but most of the time it was lower.
Okay. So you maybe 55, 60 or something?
Closer to 70.
Okay.
70 miles a week. So if you think about that, it's about 10 miles a day.
And so, as you get ready for Pittsburgh, what do you know about the course? What are you learning about the course while you're here in town? You're here a little earlier than some of the other runners.
Right.
So what are you doing with that extra time?
I got here. I was actually a blogger for the team or for the race association, and which was really cool. But I got to meet up with some people who have run the course before at an event last night, and they were telling me about, and I talked to Patrice too, who's
Madame Morris,
the
marathon director.
Right. And she talked me through the first 10 miles, which is the 10 miler, the EQT 10 miler backwards. each of the bridges, what they're like, and then where the big hill is. And Clara Santucci, the winner from last year, the female winner, she talked me through what the hills, what to expect with the hills and the downhill at mile 24.
Wait a minute. Your competitor is helping you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a newbie. And I'm also, what I realize is I'm much younger than everybody else who's racing. I'm only 22, and I didn't even know how much younger I was than everybody else. I'm a solid 5 years younger.
Well, they say that whether you're a man or a woman, that you peak as a marathoner at like 30?
In your 30s, yeah. I'm a noob.
Right, but that means you're 10 years away from your peak.
Yeah.
So you could be doing this for you could not just be potentially in the 2016 Olympics, but 2020 and beyond.
2024, yeah, which is really cool and exciting for me because most people will stick to their slower or shorter distances and work their way up to the marathon because people are very reluctant to move up because it's just adding more training and adding more wear on your body. But I really like this distance, so I'm going to be lucky enough to get a lot of experience. And that's what I don't have right now in any kind of road racing, so I think Claire is really helping me out.
Okay, as long as you know you can trust her.
Yeah.
There's a camaraderie in marathoning that probably doesn't exist in other sports.
True, very true.
We're talking with Emily Gordon. She is an elite runner who is taking part in the women's version of the Pittsburgh Marathon, the women's half, I guess, would be the correct way to phrase that, of the marathon on Sunday. She is the champion of the Nike Women's Marathon in San Francisco and has already qualified for the trials for the 2016 Olympics. You could end up making the Olympic team. You have to be what, in the top three for that?
Top three, yes. And you have to have already qualified with an Olympic. There's an Olympic time. It's a 2:44 on a course. So I've satisfied that at least. So then top three at the Olympic trials on top of that. So
that's a tall order, but doable based on what you have shown so far potentially. The question, though, is I guess that a lot of people might have is what about that biochemistry career? How does that factor into your future plans?
Well, I love biochemistry. I loved my work I did in the research lab. I got a minor in biomedical research, which is something I'm really passionate about. So moving to the Twin Cities has been great for that because there's quite a bit of industry there, mostly in food science, which I'm mostly interested in. So there's General Mills, Land O'Lakes, things of that nature. So I'm working on hopefully either going back to school to the U of M for a food science master's or trying to hop in somewhere in industry to do some research and development. I'm really I worked with plants a lot. When I was in school. So I worked with development of plants. So I'd really like to stick around in the agriculture stuff, I think.
And while you're sticking around Pittsburgh, are you planning on taking in any of the sites, touring the city at all while you're here?
I would love to. I got to drive a little bit downtown. When I was here for the 10-miler as well, we got to see, of course, PNC Stadium. And we went by Highland Park, the soccer stadium. I would like to. I mean, of course, I want to drive around everywhere. I'll get to see a lot on my run, though. I think as
yes.
long as I take it in,
yes.
focus, yeah. So.
And did you find that the Pittsburgh, granted it was just the 10-miler back in November that you ran, but what did you think of the Pittsburgh running supporters, the people that line up along the course and cheer you on?
Yeah, they're great. They're really, really awesome. Everybody's so nice, and I've heard some great things about the part of the course that I haven't seen in the 10-mile. The guy who picked me up at the airport was telling me him and his family gets out there with big signs and lots of cheering, and everybody's so nice. So it's going to be awesome.
All right. So about a block or so from here is Carson Street.
Yeah.
Probably want to avoid that until after the race, and then that might be the place where you'll want to hang out and
Definitely.
Celebrate potentially your victory.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Emily Gordon, she has a chance to win the Women's Marathon at the Pittsburgh Marathon on Sunday, and she's one of the elite runners, potential Olympian. Emily Gordon, it's been a delight to meet you. Thank you so much
Thank
for joining
you.
Us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to our website at WESA.FM and listen to past segments of the show. Until Monday, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Have a great marathon weekend, Pittsburgh.